Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 83, Dragon Sword. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Hey there!
We are back, of course, to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We're only about a week away from the launch of the Nintendo Switch, but mostly what we're going to be focusing on this week are a few new Nintendo-related merchandise products, as well as our big topic, which is the Wii U Essentials. With Switch on the way, Wii U is pretty much going to say goodbye, so we're going to talk about our top games that you got to have for that system. But before we get to that, let's start things off with some news. Specifically, as I was saying, there is some new Nintendo merchandise to talk about, and the thing that's at the front of my mind is the new Legend of Zelda Art and Artifacts book that just came out a couple of days ago as we're recording this.
So you have this in hand right now?
I do. I ordered it, and it arrived last night, and it is pretty darn glorious. It is more than 400 pages of illustrations and artwork from the Legend of Zelda series.
Wow. So you get the one with the Master Sword on the front, which I thought was kind of not the good-looking one. Is that right?
Well, I got both.
You got both. You got two of the same book, Chris Hoffman.
I have three of the same book because I have the Japanese one as well. But the Master Sword one, the limited edition, collector's edition, I'm not keeping. I am giving it to a friend I'm selling it to a friend at cost because it was pretty limited. And I ordered one right away just because I saw it was available. I'm like, let's get this just in case.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to keep it, but my friend wants one. She's a huge, huge, huge Zelda fan. And so that's why I have it in my hands, but I am not going to keep it permanently.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're a Zelda fan, this thing is great. Whether you're talking about the limited edition or the regular edition, it's just chock full of stuff. Character art, item art, enemy art, about 20 pages of interviews, and it's like 10 pages longer than the Japanese book.
Wow. What's in there? Do you know? Did you have to go page by page to figure out what's different?
I would probably have to go page by page to figure it out. I don't know if there's actually any new content.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that some things are arranged differently. Like, for example, there's a logo and packaging gallery that's been combined into one unit in this book. And in the Japanese book, it was two separate sections. And it looks a lot better in this one. The Japanese one, they just kind of took all the logos and just crammed them all into a spread together. And then the same with all of the packaging. But this one, they grouped it by game. They would have the logos. They'd have the box art for the American version. They have the box up for the Japanese version, and that definitely takes up more space and looks a lot better. Another change I noticed is that this one has a gatefold illustration from Breath of the Wild. That doesn't increase the page count, but it's definitely a cool new addition.
Cool.
So yeah, this thing is really awesome for Zelda fans, and I couldn't recommend it more. Are you going to pick this one up? Did you get Hyrule Historia?
I didn't. I don't own any of these art books. I don't have a good excuse for that. I maybe just limited time for reading. I would like to buy these, especially because they're so cheap. It's like, you know, on Amazon, they're just like, you know, what, $20 a piece
Less? The MSRP is $40, but I only paid $20 for mine.
Yeah. So I'm definitely going to get these. Maybe I was waiting to see if they're going to box them up in like one big collection in some sort of box, but who knows.
Well, they might. I mean, there's more books on the way.
Yeah. I do collect art books. They're like Mickey Mouse comic book art books made by Fantagraphics. And what they do is they'll release one volume, and then when they release the second volume, they'll package the first those two volumes together in a box. So now I've got boxes of these books, so I have to hold off on buying each new volume because I want to wait for the box to come out. So maybe that's what I was waiting for, a box, but that may never come.
It might not, but there is a rumor that another book is on the way, and that is the Super Mario Brothers Encyclopedia.
Oh, cool.
This is a book that came out in Japan a year or two ago, and you know, like the title says, it has everything you'd want to know about Mario. It's got the games, the characters, the power-ups, the levels, the enemies, the obstacles, talks about ports and spin-offs and all that jazz. And the listing has now gone up on Amazon, indicating that it's going to be coming to North America. It's supposedly also going to be published by Dark Horse and come out on June 15th, and it clocks in at 256 pages. And there's nothing official about this on Dark Horse's website, and there's also no way to order it off of Amazon in the U.S. just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this all sounds legit, and knowing that they've also published the Zelda books, makes me think that this really is going to come out this summer. And I think that's going to be pretty darn cool.
Cool.
Yeah, I did get the Japanese version of this one. It does have a lot of text, so I regret a little bit. So I'm really looking forward to being able to get in English and actually read all about this stuff instead of just looking at the pretty pictures.
Yeah, yeah. When I buy something in a foreign language, a book, just because, you know, why not? You thumb through it once, you look at the pictures, and there's nothing else in there for you. So.
Yep, that can sometimes be true. In addition to new Zelda and Mario books, there's also some new Mega Man merchandise that's on the way. At the New York Toy Fair that was held this past weekend, we got a reconfirmation that Super 7's tiny Mega Man muscle figures are on the way. Do you know about these?
No, I didn't. And I actually own a set of Super 7's muscle figures. A few years back at Comic-Con, they did a pop-up shop for Masters of the Universe. So I have a couple boxes of Masters of the Universe themed muscles, and they're really, really well done. So I'm excited to see what they do with Mega Man.
Yeah, of course, muscles being, you know, the little tiny pink wrestler characters.
Flesh-colored.
From the 80s.
Yeah, like pinky little plastic toys. They're not bendable, they're not posable, they're just little, they're about an inch high. They had a lot of detail. They're very Japanese looking. I'm guessing they came from Japan, these muscle
figures.
Yeah,
they originated in Japan. Yeah, it was Kanuku Man over there. And
a terrible NES game, by the way.
yes, this is true. It was really awful.
Yeah.
So they're combining that muscle idea with Mega Man, and they're giving us 12 figures that are going to be coming out in, I think, packs of three. So it's going to include Mega Man, Cut Man, Elec Man, Ice Man, Fire Man, Bomb Man, and Guts Man. That's all the bad guys from Mega Man 1, as well as Sniper Joe, a Metal, Dr. Wily, Dr. Light, and the Yellow Devil.
Oh, cool. The Yellow Devil, I mean, he's not going to be to scale, right? That's a really large character.
Right.
So
I don't think I've seen a picture of him, so I'm not sure exactly what he's going to look like.
Yeah.
But like the Metal, because he is so small, they actually made him larger. So he's like ginormous out of scale. So I imagine we're going to have like a really small looking Yellow Devil and a real big Metal. But everybody else is going to be pretty much to scale. But that's kind of cool for Mega Man fans. You know, for me, I've got so many Mega Man collectibles that actually look more like the characters. I'm probably not going to get these, but I think it's pretty neat they're making them. And I'm always a fan of seeing the bosses because they always seem to get the short end of the stick.
Yeah. What I can say is these usually are pretty affordable price-wise. So if you were considering it, it's not even worth thinking about. Just pick them up. It's like, I think I paid like, what, $4 or $5 for the pack of four that I have. So.
Oh, wow. Yep. That is a pretty good price. And then over in Japan, there was Wonderfest 2017, and the company Sentinel showed off more Mega Man figures. They're continuing their 4-inch-nel line. And, you know, I picked up some of these that came out already. I got original Mega Man, and I got Mega Man EXE. And, you know, they're pretty decent. They're posable. They're pretty detailed. They look pretty nice. But they're not quite as good as some of the past Mega Mans in some ways. But still, looking at these, I'm actually more excited about the ones I already have because we know Mega Man X is on the way. That had been shown before. But now they're showing a Mega Man from Mega Man 64 or Mega Man Legends, that character being named Mega Man Volnut. And then the Mega Man from Mega Man Star Force is coming out. So once I have all these, it's going to be like you're going to have all five of the main Mega Mans from Mega Man, Mega Man X, 64, Battle Network, and Star Force. And being able to display all those together in the same scale from the same line is going to be pretty darn rad, so I say as a Mega Man fan.
Yeah, that's cool. I like the design of these. I didn't expect to actually like these, but they're really cool. They look almost as detailed as the Tamashii Nation's Mega Man figures, but I'm guessing they're quite a bit shorter, aren't they?
Just a little bit shorter. Yeah, maybe an inch or so shorter.
Okay.
But it's not too much different. Yeah. But they don't have as many different hands and add-ons and stuff like that. And as I mentioned, the stand that you use is just this, you know, semi-transparent arm with a claw on it. And it's pretty terrible. So I like to pose them without having to resort to that.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, they're pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
There was also shown a limited edition black and white panda version of Mega Man EXC. I guess that was announced a while back, maybe earlier in the month or maybe even last month. It's a really cool looking version of that Mega Man character. I really, really like it. Unfortunately, I get the impression it's going to be exclusive to some event or something like that, and I'm probably never going to get my hands on one without paying an arm and a leg.
Yeah.
But it looks really, really neat.
So how much are these coming in at?
I haven't seen exact prices, but the previous ones were somewhere around $40 a pop.
Oh, that's not too bad.
It's not too bad. It's not cheap.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the detail you get, it could be a lot worse.
And these are, you'd have to import them, or are they going to actually be sold stateside here in the U.S.?
Well, I don't think you're going to be able to find them at your local Toys R Us or anything, but you'll be able to pick them up at pretty much any online retailer. You'll get them from a Big Bad Toy Store, which is where I get a lot of this stuff, and I'm sure other retailers will have them. The interesting thing about the ones I got is that they all had Mega Man packaging, not Rockman packaging. So they actually did localize it for import. So, you know, it's something of a domestic release.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you're basically importing them.
Yeah,
that's one of the reasons they're
sense.
Kind of pricey.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on from the collectibles news, we've got some listener email to discuss.
Cool.
A couple episodes ago, we were talking about if there should be a successor to the Nintendo 3DS. And so we've got a couple of comments about that. The first one comes from a listener, Johnny P. And he says, FYI, Vita vertical resolution was 544. The Switch's 720 is a fair bit more, right? The Switch may be the highest res mainstream portable to date. The first mainstream HD portable? 720p is HD. Of course, higher and more is always more desirable, but ultimately it comes down to the games. The 3DS proves that in spades, in my opinion.
That's true. The 3DS, even though the technology was kind of past its due date when it launched, it had that 3D gimmick, which is awesome. And the games were just, and are still just, it's my favorite console. It's literally my favorite console, the 3DS. That second to the Super Nintendo, I should say. Yeah, so it really is all about the games, and who cares if the resolution is not super high. The nice thing about the Switch is, it's unfortunate that the resolution isn't like 1080p, but the screen size isn't very big, so the pixel density is really high, and so at 720p, it should look beautiful. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. The thing about the Switch is it's surprisingly small. I think when you see these trailers and even the events for the Switch, they didn't really show it in anyone's hands all too much. And it was hard to get an idea of the scale of the device. And now that we know it's quite a bit smaller than people expected. And that actually helps when talking about like screen resolution. So it should look great.
Continuing on with his email, he says, as for a 3DS successor, it has to be great for kids and backwards compatible. Both of those reasons you guys mentioned, and I think those are the compelling reasons for Nintendo to keep the handheld portable line going in whatever name they want to give it. Fitting in a pocket, etc., can also fall under good for kids. Obviously, that was stuff we talked about, and I couldn't agree more. I'm not sure I have anything to add to this, but yes. Thanks for the letter, Johnny, and I pretty much agree with you completely.
Me too.
The next email comes from Shu X, and he writes, when the DS was released, Nintendo stated that it wouldn't be the end of the Game Boy line, but that the DS would be a third pillar of their business. With the increasing development times and complexity of modern games, supporting three systems seems like a tall order for anyone. But what about two? Do you think Switch plus a handheld is sustainable for Nintendo today? Wii U and 3DS sure didn't seem like it. There's more to his letter, but to answer this part first, I certainly remember that third pillar thing about the Game Boy Advance back in the day. And I remember even then I was just kind of rolling my eyes saying, oh yeah, sure, they're really going to continue this thing. And yeah, as it turned out, they didn't do it. They dropped it like a bad habit soon enough. And I also agree that it seems like, you know, sustaining two systems was pretty difficult for Nintendo during the days of the Wii U. I think that part of that was probably because of the jump to HD, and it obviously took a lot more resources to make games in HD on Wii U than it did on the Wii and in earlier systems, so I think they were still trying to adapt to that, and that's probably still going to continue when it comes to the Switch and the 3DS. Can they do it? Have they learned enough? Do they have increased teams to help with that? I'm not sure yet, but yes, you do make a good point, and I do think that is one of the reasons why you might want to say, yeah, all the development should be focused on a single system. The email then continues, personally, I'd like to see a Switch Mini, or Switch Boy, that was handheld only using the same resolution, but maybe a smaller, more pixel-dense touchscreen at a lower price point. Do you think something like this would dilute too many of the Switch's selling points? Again, this was something else that we brought up on that episode, and I have to agree. I think that perhaps having sort of a scaled-down version of the Switch that's portable-only might be a great idea. You know, it would dilute a lot of the features, and it's not something I would want to see them do out the gate, but maybe 2 years down the line or 3 years down the line, once everybody knows what Switch is, I think it might be a good idea to release this new portable-only version of the Switch, and that way they could make something cheaper, sell it at an entry-level price point, make it a first system for young gamers. And so even though it wouldn't have all the features, it would be kind of like the 2DS, where it takes out one of the key features, but it still has the rest, and you can sell it cheap, and you can still get in the hands of lots of people. But it's not something I would do right away. Definitely wait on that and see how the market's looking and do it at that time. ShoeX's email then concludes, "Gimmick-wise, I don't like 3D, and I'm glad more focus went into game performance instead. As for two screens being necessary, generally, anytime you're doing something on one screen, the other is blank or dimmed or features a menu that could easily be shown on the other screen. Has the well run dry, or do you have examples of recent games you love that require two displays?" I'll go ahead and answer this one first. When it comes to games that require two displays, I can't think of a whole lot. A few that come to mind are Super Mario Maker and Kid Icarus Uprising, where you have a lot of interaction with the bottom screen, and it's really nice to be able to have that additional clean second screen where you can see everything that's going on. Especially with Kid Icarus, I don't think that one would be possible without a separate screen for that. With Mario Maker, it's just, you know, convenient to be able to have the clean screen while you're doing all the interaction on the bottom screen, or the separate screen in the gamepad's case. But for the most part, I think of having two screens as more of a luxury. Kind of like 3D is a luxury. It's not something you need, but something that can be really, really nice to have. I just think it's great to have your map or your inventory or your HUD elements on a second screen, and that leaves the main play field completely uncluttered. I mean, sure, you could put that stuff up there, but I find that having it on a second screen after experiencing it for so many years is just really, really nice, and I like being able to do that, especially when you're talking about a handheld system. I mean, if you've got a huge, giant 55-inch TV where there's lots of space to put stuff, sure, but if you're talking about a handheld, that can get really cluttered really fast, so I definitely like the option of having two screens like that. Scott, what do you think?
Henry Hatsworth. Have you played Henry Hatsworth on the DS?
You know, I've never actually played that one, but...
Oh, it's such a great game.
Yeah, I know my coworkers at NP really liked it. For some reason, I think I was like the only person in the office who never actually got to play
it. Yeah, and...
But yeah, it got really high praise.
Yeah, I would say games like Henry Hatsworth, games like Brain Age, which are just kind of revolutionary, made really good use of those two screens. Did anything on the Wii U really make use of the two screens? I don't think so. I mean, as an aiming mechanism, maybe having that second screen was fun or interesting as a gimmick, but it ultimately was just kind of felt tacked on. As for the 3DS, honestly...
It was very convenient,
It was. And having a map or being able to select items, or in Street Fighter 4, there was, you know, you press on the screen on these mm-hmm. giant big buttons you could mash to do like a Hadouken or something. So mm-hmm. that's useful and handy. But of course, you're not looking at that screen. It's more of a control mechanism, so...
Right. They did the same thing with The Legend of Zelda, where they added an extra button on the touch yeah. screen. In addition to your physical butt.
So I'm going to say I will miss the second screen, but in just a few instances, I can honestly think of where it was super vital. And obviously with the Wii U, with the off-screen play, the two screens weren't really that vital at all for the Wii U. You know, you could use that second screen as a benefit, but if you didn't want it or you wanted the small screen, you just, you know... could live without the mini map or the inventory mm-hmm. access, but I'm gonna miss that. I really love two right. screens. And again, games like Henry Hatsworth and Brain Age, you just couldn't do without two screens. So, but those are just there. I can't really think of many. Can you think of any beyond the ones you mentioned?
Oh, I probably could if yeah. I really thought
it'd
about
take
it.
A while,
but
though.
No, for the most part, it's not essential. Yeah. It's just really, really nice to have. Yes. And like you said, I hate to see it go.
Yeah, and even in games like, what is it, the Yoshi game on the 3DS, where you're getting a two-height screen option because the top screen and the bottom screen are part of the same viewport. Princess Peach made decent use of that second screen. You know, the Mario and Luigi game seemed to make really good use of the second screen.
Oh, yeah, the Mario and Luigi games, those are mm-hmm. good points.
Because, you know, they're directing your eye up towards the top and up towards the bottom, or down towards the bottom, and they played with the different screens. Ultimately, I can't think of too many examples where two screens are vital, but it was always nice to have that option, and I think it was fun mm-hmm. to see what different developers made with that second screen. Ultimately, it was Nintendo as the first party to really make that second screen shine in their first party titles. But yeah, I'll be sad to see it go, and I hope the next handheld other than the Switch is a two-screen affair. And honestly, I really, really would love to see it, the 3D continue. I know a lot of people didn't like that gimmick, but I loved it.
All right, fair enough. In addition to these emails, you were soliciting some comments on Twitter for responses for our Switch controller ideas. And you wanted to read some of those, right?
I do, yeah. I got a lot of really fun ideas from our listeners, and I'm just going to go through some of the really, like, cool ideas that I heard.
Okay.
Mike O on Twitter, I don't want to read out your whole name because I don't want to dox you like that, but Mike O said he just wants one with the exact amount of buttons he needs, like a modular controller where you could switch out how many buttons it actually has, which I thought was a really cool idea. Huh. And it seems like Nintendo has a patent on this. If you look for mm-hmm. this modular control, not just switching
out... Well, yeah, that's originally what we thought that Switch might be at one
yeah,
time.
Yeah, where mm-hmm. instead of switching out the size, you're just switching out modules where the buttons are. So I think that's mm-hmm. pretty inventive, kind of like a Lego or constructor type set.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dark Shoei on Twitter wants a proper D-pad, of course, for Zelda, Metroid, and Mega Man, mm-hmm. and wanted themed controllers, which I thought was pretty scary thought, because if for us collect-em-all type people, that's going to get super expensive.
Yeah, we were talking about doing Super NES mm-hmm. and NES one, so I should have mentioned specifically that, yes, a regular control pad mm-hmm. or D-pad mm-hmm. on those would be a requirement, of course.
Tamales Yatol on Twitter said he wants a completely dumbed-down Joy-Con that only works when attached, so it would be the super budget version of the Joy-Con. And I'm guessing you could probably, a third party could make something like this. It wouldn't have HD rumble. It wouldn't have batteries. It would not have a gyroscope. Obviously, it would be gimped completely, but that would mean it would be very cheap. And for a replacement or a second pair to bang around with, I think I'd like that idea for like $10. Because right now the technology in those Joy-Cons, you're not going to pay $10 for a pair of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're pretty expensive. Mm-hmm. I suppose a budget option might be okay.
Yeah,
if that would work.
One more from Shu, who wrote in this week, the legend of Shu on Twitter. He wants high-quality speaker Joy-Cons for watching movies and listening to music. So this would be...
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like, I don't know, like the Beats by Dre version of the internal Switch speaker, which I think is a great idea too, because they could be removable, they're Bluetooth, and for watching movies on the go, that's a really, really neat idea. I don't think that's a very viable idea just because the Switch has its own speaker, and I don't even know if we really know the quality of that speaker, but that's a really, really specific use case. But I like that idea.
Yeah, I mean, I almost think of it more as a very use-specific dock than I do as a controller interface. But yeah, I could see a market for that.
For sure.
Of course, we got to make sure that we actually get things like movies on the Switch first. But yeah, I could see people investing in one
of those. Yeah, that's right. We have no... we don't need... Is there even YouTube out the gate? Probably not.
Don't think so.
And I also want to call out Tamales Yatol for creating this ridiculous Photoshop. He basically hollowed out a Wii U gamepad and showed how you could possibly slide a Switch into a Wii U gamepad, which is just bananas. Can you imagine, instead of separate Joy-Con, but like a housing that's literally just a Wii U gamepad that you slide your Switch into? I thought that was pretty wacky. But hey, you get the D-pad back with that, so.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. So that's about it. Keep them coming. I love all those ideas. Really, you know, get you thinking about what the possibilities could be with this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks to everyone who sent us email and sent us tweets, and keep them coming. we'll talk about more stuff in future episodes. This seems to me like a good place to take an intermission, so let's do that, and when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, which is Wii U Essentials. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is Wii U Essentials. Of course, the Switch comes out in about a week as we're recording this. So out with the old, in with the new. Wii U is going into the past and probably into a lot of people's closets. But, you know, if you want to have all of the best games, all the most significant games, all the most important games, we decided to compile a list and say, yes, these are the games you should absolutely, positively, definitely have if you want to have the definitive Wii U library. So we've narrowed it down to about 15 titles. Two games that will not be on this list, strangely enough, are two of our favorite Wii U titles, The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess HD and The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker HD. And while we both love these games and think they're fantastic, they're also just, you know, basically enhanced ports of games that came out on GameCube and Wii. And so I don't really think of them as defining titles for the Wii U. Are they great? Absolutely. But
they're two of my favorite games on the Wii U, which is really kind of, I don't know what that says. I do know what that says, which is kind of a
sad. Well, it means that Zelda is great. It means Zelda is great is what it means.
That's what it means.
But we're just not going to include those in our top 15 because they are just ports of older games. But onto the list itself, onto our 15 Wii U Essentials. We had a bit of debate as to what number 15 was going to be, but we ended up going with Tokyo Mirage Sessions. It's a pretty crazy RPG that combines elements of Persona with characters from Fire Emblem and then throws it all into this J-pop blender. It's totally nuts. It's totally weird, but it is a really cool RPG. There's not really anything else like it on any other Nintendo system. We almost put Yoshi's Woolly World into this slot because it is an excellent platformer, but in the end we decided because there is that 3D version out there that has actually more content in some ways, we decided to go with Tokyo Mirage Sessions instead. Not an RPG for everyone, but it's cool and quirky and weird, so I think it's well-deserving of being in your Wii U library.
Yeah, and the Wii U really didn't have a lot of strong RPGs, which I guess this list is going to show that fact. I can't really name that many. I mean, on Virtual Console, you had your pick, but like new RPGs, we didn't really get very many.
Well, I mean, from the beginning of this list, you wouldn't know that, though, because our next one, number 14, is Xenoblade Chronicles X. And yes, I completely agree. There were not too many fantastic RPGs on the system, but here are two of them right here. Tokyo Mirage Sessions and Xenoblade Chronicles X. Xenoblade, just this massive, massive, giant world. There's a reason that this is number 14 on the list and not higher. I mean, I was really, really entranced by this game when it first came out. I was looking for it for so long. It looked so amazing. But in the end, I never end up getting more than like 15 hours into it. It does have, you know, a couple of pacing issues I had to deal with. And because of that, I just never got that far. But still, what I played was just amazing. Just this super immersive world. And while I could criticize other aspects of it, you know, some of the stuff that it does is just mind-blowing, staggering. Just a massive, massive RPG. The worst thing about it is finding the time to explore it all. On to number 13. A fantastic platform from Ubisoft, Rayman Legends.
Yeah, this one wasn't, you know, just on the Wii U. It was on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. Or was it the last generation? Was it on a PS3 and Xbox 360? I think it was.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I don't remember, but either way, I love this game on the Wii U because of the off-screen play. For some reason, that just really tickled me. Like, having what felt like a portable Rayman game of this quality just looked beautiful on the Wii U screen and on the big screen, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried that we're not going to see games like this going forward just because of the expense they went to make this game. It's like
well, we know we're getting a port of it on Switch.
Yeah, that's so exciting. So, you know, the fact that we're basically getting the same game on Switch, I'm going to buy it again. It's as gorgeous. If you haven't played Rayman Legends, it's beautiful, hand-drawn visual style. It's just incredible. And I was never a huge Rayman guy, but this game and Rayman Origins really, really turned me around. And I'm now a huge Rayman fan. The controls are just so great. The different playable characters are wonderful. They have a different feel to them. And the levels are just fun. There's these speed run areas where you have to just jump and run as fast as you can to get beyond like a hit of fire that's advancing on you. And these giant levels and beautiful enemies. I can't say enough good things. Collecting all the lums, it's kind of, I'll miss a lum and I'll have to go back through the whole level just because of that. What did you think of Rayman Legends?
I'd have to agree wholeheartedly. It's an absolutely gorgeous platformer, lots of fun, really cool. Probably the best platformer on the system this side of Mario.
I wouldn't quite say that, but it's so close. It's so close.
The next one, number 12 on the list, is Pikmin 3. Obviously, the third in the series of Nintendo's quirky real-time strategy games. The series never looked better. I mean, this is one of the best examples of how Nintendo was able to benefit from the jump to HD visuals. It looks freaking fantastic. They added new characters. They added new play mechanics. The controls were great. The bosses were great. The new kinds of Pikmin were great. And there was even some really cool DLC. So, yeah, I would say this is definitely one of the games you got to have on the system.
I'm not a huge Pikmin guy, so I didn't play this. I've seen it played, which is not the same as playing it. Thank you to Twitch for that. Huh, it's one of these Nintendo Select titles now, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yes, yeah, so you can pick it up for only $20.
I think it's probably worth it now, for me anyway. I think what's nice about those Nintendo Selects, you can go back into the library and pick up the things you might have missed out on and not pay exorbitant prices on eBay for a game that might have gone out of print.
Yep, absolutely. Number 11 on the list is Bayonetta 2. The Wii U isn't really a system that's known for its hardcore action games, but boy, it's got Bayonetta 2, and that kind of means you don't really need a whole lot of other great action games, because this one has it in spades. Crazy action, some great character designs. You know, Bayonetta deemed cool enough by the fans to be chosen as a character in Smash Brothers. Just lots and lots of over-the-top action. If you don't have this game, you should totally get it, because it is quite spectacular in many, many ways. It fills the action void for the system very, very nice.
So this was one of the very early titles on the Wii U, right? Or at least it was announced very early. Before the Wii U was even launched, this was known to be a game that was going to be coming to the platform, right? I'm almost certain that's the case. I just wonder, how did Nintendo get this game as an exclusive? Because it just feels like they must have paid to get this game as an exclusive.
Well, my assumption is that Sega, who was the original publisher of Bayonetta 1, mm-hmm. decided they weren't interested in it. So Nintendo said, hey, well, we will step in and we will finance it and we will bring it out as long as it's exclusive to our system. And so that's what they did. I know there were a lot of people that were complaining who liked the first one, saying, no, we want it on PlayStation.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, if Nintendo's going to have your back with the cost, then they get to have their exclusive game.
And it's funny because Bayonetta 2 sticks out like a sore thumb in this list. It really does. it's the only game like it, I think, on the console. I can name 100 games like not like it, but you know, play mechanics and whatnot on PS3 and Xbox 360 and also on PS4 and Xbox One. But you just don't get a lot of these games on Nintendo systems.
I think that's what makes it such a significant part of the Wii U library. Mm-hmm. Of course, I think it also stands out. It's probably the only game on our list that's rated M, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Yeah, rated M for blood and gore, intense violence, partial nudity, strong language, and suggestive themes.
They got them all, except for drugs. They got everything but drugs.
So, yeah, it's not exactly your typical Nintendo title, but still, absolutely freaking great. Moving on to number 10. Oh, hey, we just had a very strong female character in Bayonetta. Now let's go to a strong female character on the completely opposite side of the spectrum. Someone who is friendly to everyone in the family. Shantae. Shantae the Belly Dancer in Shantae Half Genie Hero, which just came out last year, both as a physical and a digital release. One of my favorite games of last year. Looks gorgeous. The game has never looked better. It was built from the ground up in HD. You can learn all kinds of fun and creative dances to gain new powers and transform into different creatures. And just the platforming is just so fun. Fun when it comes to the platforming and whipping bad guys with your hair. And, you know, very traditional in a lot of ways. It's, you know, strictly 2D gameplay, but man, is it ever good. Have you had a chance to play this one, Scott? I know you hadn't as of last year.
No, I still haven't. I'm terrible. I'm a bad person. I should, though. Game on our list that we have talked about previously, but I haven't gotten a chance to play a ton of it. But this game, no. I have a new baby, so my opportunities for playing games is limited. I'm going to put it on my list. Let me just say that. Yoshi's Woolly World and loving it just because it's so easy to pick up and put down. And I'm sure that I could say the same thing about Shantae. It's just that my 3DS is a lot easier to fire up, you know, the Wii U and all the... It's tied to the room that it's in. So that's, you know, that's a bit of a drawback. Hopefully the Switch will definitely fix that.
Well, it's really good. You should definitely play it when you get a chance. Moving on to number 9, it is Splatoon. In some ways, you could call Splatoon the single most important definitive game on the Wii U system. Obviously, it's a brand new IP. Obviously, it captured a lot of people's imagination. Obviously, it did completely new things in the world of multiplayer shooters, and I really, really appreciate it for that. I'm not the biggest shooter fan, personally, which is why it's not higher up on this list, but still, I can't deny that what it does really, really well, and it has a really fun single-player mode in addition to all the multiplayer online stuff. So you gotta have this game if you have a Wii U.
Yeah, I feel like Nintendo caught lightning in the bottle with Splatoon.
I think
they knew what they had with this IP, but I'm just well, the first time I said it, I think we talked about this a long time ago, but you know, it would have been so much easier for them to just slap a bunch of Mario characters all over this game and just call it like, you know, Mario Paintball or something. And that, but that's not exactly what this was. They just brand new IP, really wacky, these squid kids and inklings. The style is just beautiful. This was a system seller for them. They actually move systems based on this one game. Mm-hmm. There's a fandom around this game that few new IPs that Nintendo's put out there has, you know, gotten a foothold with. Like when I went to Comic-Con the last few years, seeing people dressed up as Splatoon characters was very, very common. And, you know, it's obviously people dress up as Mario and Princess Peach all over the place as well. But Splatoon just really captured the imagination of fans.
Yeah, it
and
sure did.
Fan art for this is crazy. Honestly, have Safe Search turned on if you're going to go looking for fan art of Splatoon. But yeah, really, really cool.
It does have tentacles, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Yeah, I can't agree that Nintendo knew what they had, but the fact that they decided to take a risk and they decided to go with a new IP and they decided to not just use previously designed characters and worlds, it really, really paid off. And it's one of the huge success stories of this generation. So kudos for that. Moving on to number 8, it is Axiom Verge.
Yeah, this game has blown me away. I've played it for all of 10 minutes, but holy cow, it's really, if I stopped playing after 10 minutes, I would have felt like I got my money's worth. What a really just great inventive game. I hope we see much more of this on the Switch, and there's good reason to believe that games like Axiom Verge and maybe even Axiom Verge will wind up on the Switch because they've made it a lot easier for people to develop games for the Switch. So that's exciting. exciting. So yeah, I can't say enough about this game, and I've literally played it for 10 minutes. So Chris, tell me why you put it at number 8.
It's just a really, really, really well-made Metroid-style nonlinear adventure. You know, I don't know if there's anything new I can say about that I haven't said before, but it's just really fun exploring the world and learning about the story. And it's got some really creative power-up usage and kinds of things that you can do. Some of them are very much in the vein of Metroid, like swinging from a grappling mm-hmm. hook. But then some of them, like, you know, glitching parts of the environments, are completely new and innovative and unlike other abilities I've seen in similar types of games. So it all just comes together in a really great, really fun package. No Metro on the system, but this certainly fills mm-hmm. that void. You know, Axiom Verge was only released as a digital release on Wii U, and the next game on our list, coming in at number 7, was also initially released digital only. Mm-hmm. It is DuckTales Remastered from the folks at Capcom and Way Forward. Of course, it did end up getting a physical release later, which is pretty cool, and it's well-deserved, because they took this beloved classic NES game, upgraded it, enhanced it, changed things around where necessary, added new levels, added voice acting, made it look absolutely gorgeous when it comes to the sprites, and just did a fabulous job of reinventing this excellent classic game.
They did a great job with this, and they used the voices from the show, which really is just a lot of fun. The art style is, it's just a cartoon. It's like you're playing the cartoon, which is really cool. But the gameplay mechanics is very, very, I would say almost one-to-one with the NES game that it's based on.
Well, they made it a little easier to control, I believe. It's not as complex.
Yes, that's right. The pogoing is a little easier.
You don't have to do the down and B and everything anymore.
Yep.
So it's a little user-friendlier. But yeah, I mean, it feels like you're playing a classic game. They didn't change anything that wasn't broken. It's got those same fabulous environments. You're going to the Himalayas, you're going to the moon, to the Amazon, mm-hmm. and then they add in new levels. And again, you know, Way Forward just really, really knows what they're doing when it comes to classic style 2D platforms.
They do.
That's why Shantae is on this list. That's why DuckTales is on this list. Also, you know, big applause to Capcom for, you know, making sure that this happened.
And the music, they gave the music a bit of a refresh, but it just, you know, mm-hmm. if you hadn't played the NES version in a while, it feels like it's the same, you know, it's as you remember it, even though obviously the one on the NES is very 8-bit sounding. But yeah, the music is, the soundtrack is great. And you can pick this up for super cheap. It's like on clearance on Amazon. It's like $14 or something. So if you haven't gotten it yet, for $14, it's a no-brainer.
Moving along from one great 2D platformer to another, coming in at number 6 is Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze.
Great game. My favorite. This is going to catch a lot of heat for saying this, but I don't really like the Donkey Kong Country games. I didn't like the SNES Donkey Kong Country games.
How come everybody I know poops on the Donkey Kong Country games? These things sold like a trillion copies.
Well, honestly,
but all my coworkers at Nintendo Power are like, ugh, that game series was never any good. And now you're all pooping all over it. Anyway, please continue. Please talk about...
I don't know. Maybe it's rose-colored glasses. A lot of people look at those SNES games and, you know, they think of their childhood, but I did not like them when they came out. I still don't like them. I've played them.
You loved it back then. I know you did.
And those graphics have not aged well.
Yeah, that's kind of true. That's very
true.
But where you're going, I'm sure, is a Tropical Freeze completely changed your mind, right? You love that one, right?
It's made me fall in love with the platforming style, which, you know, involves bouncing off bad guys and getting across ravines and using your roll power and those crazy barrels and shooting yourself all over the level and going to the background of the level.
Gotta use those barrels.
It's a lot of fun. Each level feels like a completely new game, obviously with the controls it's the same game, but they really, really paid a lot of attention to making each level look fresh. The platforming is second to none. I think it's just snappy, and if you love platforming, it's like the gold standard, you know? And I've seen this game speedrun, and it's really fun to watch because, you know, it's a game that if you get good at it, you can get through these levels really quickly. I'm terrible, so I do not get through it quickly, and I do not get all the puzzle pieces. Yeah, it's a great game, and I highly recommend it. Even if you hate Donkey Kong Country, as I do, this game is great. I don't hate Donkey Kong Country. I'm just not a big fan of the SNES version. Donkey Kong Country Malibu Breeze, what was it called?
Just Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Returns. Is a great game on the Wii, and this just continues that tradition. A lot of fun. It's a no-brainer. It's one of these Nintendo Selects. So if you don't have it yet, pick it up.
Well, I'm certainly not going to agree with you that the older Donkey Kong Country games were of low quality. But I am definitely glad to see Donkey Kong return to form, you know, like he did in Returns, and then Tropical Freeze continued that. And yeah, it's you know, hard as nails a lot of the times, but it's a lot of fun to play, and glad to see that good old Donkey Kong is once again getting the respect he deserves.
Mm-hmm.
Next on the list, coming in at number 5, Mario Kart 8. You know, what else is there to say about Mario Kart? This franchise has been going on for a long time. Mm-hmm. This is my favorite entry in the series. It's probably the biggest entry in the series. It's just got so much content. Tons of levels, tons of vehicles. This is where they added in crossover characters. You got Link in there. You got Animal Crossing characters. You got F-Zero vehicles. You've got amiibos to give you new costumes. All kinds of cool, crazy stuff. You got the Luigi Death Stare in there. Okay, you don't have multiplayer, but even so, this is, I believe, the number one best-selling game on the Wii U. And, you know, I mean, that is probably evidence enough alone that it's a must-have game for the system.
I didn't realize that it was the best-selling game on the system. That's a surprise.
I believe it is.
Yeah. I would say every Mario Kart, save for maybe Double Dash, it has always been like an advancement of the series, and it did one better than the last one. And I think they just keep refining this game where you can always say the latest Mario Kart is the best Mario Kart, except for mm-hmm. Double Dash. You know, and they also, when the memes came out with this game, with the slow motion, like Luigi mm-hmm. going across the finish line, them,
right.
I don't know if that was a happy thing. Like, I don't know what made them think, why don't we do this very slow motion right after somebody crosses the finish line? We see what's going on.
Well, they included that video feature to let you upload your favorite clips of the game.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, that was totally planned. I mean, the Luigi Death Stare specifically, which is when he passes someone or gets passed by someone. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't think that particular thing was intended. But yes, it worked out very well to their advantage in having this MKTV to be able to share that stuff with everyone.
This game
sold
itself.
It's a cool and underrated feature.
Yes, yeah. I definitely think that's the case. I wish they would have connected it, hooked it in directly to like Facebook and Twitter. And so that would have made it a lot easier for people to make memes out of, or even a GIF generator. If the Switch has something like a GIF generator, they're going to have no problem having these games promote themselves. That's something I think Nintendo has a problem with, making it okay to have the games promote themselves.
Well, there have definitely been, you know, some issues in the past, but it's something that they're clearly learning about. You know, Mario Kart 8, I think, made it pretty easy to share that stuff with people.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Switch is going to have that button on
that share button
for taking... Right now for just screenshots, and later on for videos and who knows what else. It's clearly something that's been on their mind.
Yeah.
I guess the only problem with having this at number 5 on the list is that there is this new and even better version of Mario Kart 8 coming out on the Switch. So in the long run, it might not be quite as much an essential game if you have the Switch version. But for now, it's the best Mario Kart out there, and so I think its place on this list is well deserved.
Mm-hmm.
On to number 4 then, Super Smash Bros. For Wii U. Much like Mario Kart, they took an established formula and somehow they managed to add even more content to make it even more exciting and more fun. You know, we already knew what Smash Bros. Was all about, but now they've upped the ante with 8 players. They've added characters we never thought we would see in Smash Bros. It's not just Nintendo characters. It's Mario and Sonic and Mega Man and Pac-Man and Ryu and Cloud. It's practically a who's who of gaming. Plus, there are new characters like Little Mac that have their own special techniques.
Yeah, Duck Hunt Dog.
Yeah, that's right. Duck Hunt Dog, Bowser Jr. Just lots and lots of really fun. I mean, you know, Miis. Putting Miis in there, playable. Not to mention lots of post-release content like that fantastic Super Mario Maker stage. Tons to unlock and collect. Probably the most robust game on the system and an absolute blast to play. You know, some people might say they can only play it with a GameCube controller, but I think that this one played fantastically whether you were using the GameCube controller adapter or you were using the Wii U gamepad, just an exceptional, amazing, deep fighting game.
I think the fact that Nintendo even made that GameCube controller adapter speaks to the level they'll go to make fans happy. Because I'm guessing they didn't sell a ton of those GameCube adapter, those GameCube controller
adapters. Oh, they
sold
as many as they made. I mean, it was pretty hard to come by, actually.
And the fact that this is, Smash is a competitive sport, esport. So, and the fact that they recognize that is really cool. And the fact that they're continuing to recognize that with the Splatoon franchise now. I don't have enough friends to play Smash Brothers with. And playing single player Smash Brothers is the saddest thing. So I would say if you're in a college dorm room right now and you don't own Smash Brothers, get it together. Get it together. Go buy a secondhand Wii U and get yourself a copy of Smash Brothers.
Well, I disagree. I think it's great whether you're playing multiplayer or you're playing solo. One players, four players, 8 players. I think it's all pretty great. And that's why it's on here as mm-hmm. one of the must-have games for the Wii U. On to our next one then. Coming in at number 3, the indie sensation Shovel Knight. Some people might be surprised that it's coming in this high on the list at number 3, but it really is that darn good. It is just an amazing, fantastic 2D platformer. It feels like it was totally carved out of the old school of gameplay from the NES and Super NES days in the best ways possible. And it really paid off for Yacht Club Games. It's just, such fun play mechanics, fun levels, cool bosses. It's just a whole heck of a lot of fun.
It's got a great sense of humor as well.
That it does. One of my favorite things about it is butt mode. It changes the words, and so some of the key words... It changes them to the word butt. And for some reason, it's just a source of endless amusement for me.
I love that they really went all the way with this. This was a Kickstarter, right? This was a Kickstarter.
Yep.
So
it was.
I
backed it.
There are actually portraits of Kickstarter backers in one of the levels. They promised like these crazy promises. Like we're going to create a whole, like this game isn't just one game. We're going to do like 3 different games. So every one of the boss characters, you're going to be able to play the game as like the Plague Knight.
Knight, Plague Knight, and then King Knight is going to be the last one.
Okay.
So yeah, by the time that actually comes out, and I believe they've sworn it is going to come out on Wii U, this might be the very last game on Wii U. Either the DLC for this with King Knight or mm-hmm. the DLC for Breath of the Wild will probably be one of the last things released on Wii U, or certainly the last that anyone cares about. But yeah, just having all that content, that's another reason to be so amazed by this game.
It's just a really great platformer. It's hard to describe. You should get it either on the Wii U or the 3DS. I have it on the 3DS.
Or hold out for the Switch version.
Or hold out for the Switch, or get them all.
Mm-hmm. On to number 2 then, Super Mario Maker. Probably shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that this game is so high up on the list. It's basically an infinite Mario game, all the 2D Mario you can possibly handle. I mean, this is something that I've been wanting to exist since I was a little kid and I first played Super Mario Brothers on the NES. Like, oh man, wouldn't it be so amazing if you could just make your own Mario levels? And here we are all this time later, and it's a reality, and it's all there, and it gives you tons of tools and, I mean, way more stuff than I imagined. I mean, I was thinking, you can do something that's like the original Super Mario Brothers. But no, it's Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario 3, Super Mario World, new Super Mario Brothers, adding in all these new obstacles and enemies and things that I never would have thought of back at the time. All the amiibo functionality that's in there.
You're getting a lot. You're getting a lot for what's, for
yes.
what's a
$50 yes, you
game.
Are.
You're getting a whole lot. This game, the only thing that I'm worried about with this game is what happens when the server shut down and you'll no longer have access to the all the online levels that people have made, and where do those go in perpetuity? Because there's so many wonderful, crazy, mm-hmm. inventive. Some people have even turned Super Mario into a puzzle game with some of these levels, or into a musical instrument, or
yeah, that's true,
or just into a crazy spectacle of just just madness. So, or even political statements. I mean,
I have not seen that, but there's a lot. I have seen everything else.
There's a lot of great
stuff. It's literally unlimited what you can do with this game. You can do so much. And of course, this is the way to play it. Not on the 3DS where you can't do proper level sharing.
Yeah, the 3DS is gimped and it's really unfortunate. I hope it comes to Switch. I feel like it has to. I feel like this game has to continue.
I don't know how they could do it because it doesn't have the dual screens. It doesn't have a touch screen. Obviously, you could do it if it's undocked.
It's undocked,
then you have a touch screen.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's docked, then there's not really a good way to do it. So as it stands now, this is one of the best reasons to own a Wii U. Definitely a game everyone should pick up.
Yeah, there's a lot there. I mean, you turn it on and there's new content right now, and you have an infinite number of levels to play. So, I mean, I would be so bold as to say, at least with the Wii U version, some of the fan made levels top the ones that the folks over at Nintendo made. So, definitely worth checking out some of the higher rated levels
for sure. And speaking of Mario, that brings us to our number one Wii U essential. Super Mario 3D World.
This is a game that kind of rewrites the book on what a Mario game could be. In the same way I think that Mario 64 did for the Super Mario Brothers series. What do you think?
Well, I think that's one way to look at it. I kind of think of it as sort of the best of all the Mario worlds. I feel like they're taking elements of traditional 2D Mario, of new Super Mario Brothers, and then of the 3D stuff of Mario 64 and Mario Galaxy, and just combine them all into one really fun, really beautiful, really exciting, really playable Mario game. You've got that multiplayer element they were introducing in the new Super Mario Brothers games, but now you've got a wide open playfield, so it works a whole lot better. But even if you just play it solo, it's still really, really well done. I think that's one of the great things about the game, is that you can play it either multiplayer or single player and have just as much fun. Really creative levels, new power-ups, new abilities. It's great to have the princess back and playable again, as well as Toad and Luigi, and they're all a little different. And then, you know, there's a hidden character in there, too. It's Mario. Mario is where Nintendo, I think, is at its creative best. And once again, they just went all out, making a very, very fun 3D platformer.
And the cat. Can't give up the cat.
That's right. This was the first one to introduce the cat suit. I almost forgot to mention that. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, that's a great power. That's probably the best Mario power-up in, I don't know, maybe the last 10 years at least. Mm-hmm. Maybe the last 20 years. Yeah, that really caught people's attentions, too. People really seemed to enjoy that cat outfit.
Chris, do you think we're going to see another game in this series on the Switch, or do you think that we'll see something different? Obviously, we're getting Super Mario Odyssey. Do you think that we'll see a Mario game from this Super Mario 3D World series on the Switch, or do you think we're just going to have to be okay with Odyssey and that's about it?
I think we're going to get more traditional 3D Mario. Yeah, that's what Odyssey is. It's a successor to Mario 64 and Sunshine, and to a lesser extent Galaxy.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way they're going for now. I think maybe there's also room for, you know, bringing back some classic 2D Mario. But I think something like this, you know, I think it'll probably be restricted to the Wii U and the 3DS. And that's why it is on this list. It's an essential. If you have a Wii U, you should definitely pick it up, because who knows, there might not be another one like it.
Yeah, and if you don't yet have a Wii U, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast, but if you don't have a Wii U, get one soon, because they stopped making them. And this is one of the first times Nintendo pulled the cord on a current system before its lifespan is really, really up. So these are going to be hard to come by, Wii U's. They didn't make a ton of them. And so getting a new one's going to be challenging. Getting a used one may be just as challenging in the next 15 years or so.
Yeah, if you don't have a Wii U yet, I don't know what you've been waiting for. If you've held out this long, you can probably do without. But if you do have one, whether you just got it or you've had it since launch, these are the top 15 games you shouldn't be without. So get them while you can.
Get them while they're on clearance.
Yeah, it's true. You can't get a lot of these cheap right now, but you know, you might not want to keep waiting, because who knows when they could just disappear and be gone forever. Anyway, that does it for this week's big topic, and I guess that means it's time to wrap up this episode of the show. But before we go, of course, there is still time for a dramatic reading. This time, it comes from the manual of the NES game Shadow of the Ninja. It's the year 2029 AD, and a madman controls the largest city in America. The Emperor Garuda and his followers have built an impregnable stronghold as a monument to his evil. Conventional forces have been unable to stop his malevolent plans for total control, but Garuda is worried. Reports have reached him that two figures have breached the outskirts of his city defenses. For the first time, he feels an inner chill, for he knows the invaders are ninjas. Hayate and Lady Kaede are ninjas of the Iga clan. Their mission is to infiltrate the fortress of Garuda and destroy his wicked empire. They are armed with the weapons of ninjutsu, the katana sword, the shuriken throwing stars, and the kusarigama sickle and chain. Together, they may have the strength to topple the Empire.
Ninjas.
Ninjas.
So you're going to set your game in the future,
yeah.
And now ninjas are going to save the world. Really?
Well, yeah. I mean, we just talked about this a couple episodes ago. I mean, I guess, I don't think you were on that episode.
No.
But yeah, that's what we learned, was that is the secret to saving the world, is ninjas.
I don't buy it.
If it's a time traveling ninja, it helps. But yeah.
You're gonna come at a robot with a bunch of like throwing stars. I don't see it.
Yeah. Yeah. They you should see them taking out these giant battle tanks and
not lasers, a katana. All right. Hey, whatever floats your boat. I say if you threw Robocop in the mix, these ninjas are in big trouble.
I don't know. He's pretty slow. I should mention,
yeah.
Shadow of the Ninja, not just a goofy manual, but a great, great game
is
as well.
Is it? It looks like a yeah. Ninja Gaiden game just by the
It
the
is very
it.
Similar to Ninja Gaiden in some ways, but it does have two-player co-op.
Uh-huh.
And it's not quite as precise as Ninja Gaiden, but it is the second best ninja game on the NES, aside from Ninja Gaiden, I would say. Yeah, it's on Virtual Console. Check it out.
All right. I did not know that. I will.
Anyhow, that's it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Scott at Plastic Bugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, of course, it would be great if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella,
1 week to go.
And my special lady friend, Tharja.
I'll murder you in your sleep.
We will see you next time.